June 1st, 1983, 3:30 p.m., hearing room 343. Work session on House Bill 2295, Senate Bill 223, Senate Bill 226, Senate Bill 405, Senate Bill 237A, gross.
Of Senate Bill 405.
My court.
Mayor Parker? This is the much vaunted recycling bill that we're looking at. And we've actually had a bill that's still reprocessing, so.
The bill fits the description.
Yes. Mayor, you want to go over what folks have put together for us?
Yes, I'm happy to report to you that our DEQ task force has a compromise. And since you kept looking at us and insisting on a compromise, we have done it. I would like to tell you just what are the main components of the compromise. As Chairperson has said, the last words are still being typed in the word processor. We didn't realize we were going to be first today. But I think that if you check, all the players are in the room, and they would back me up, I hope, that it is a compromise that we can all agree on. So these are the components. We have the opportunity to recycle, which is a depot at a landfill or at a more convenient location. And that is to be provided by the disposal site permittee. We have a curbside collection program within UGBs of cities of more than 3,000 and within the metro UGB. We have an alternative method. We have an alternative method which is to be adopted by rule by the EQC to allow for some flexibility in the program if there are other ways of providing the opportunity to recycle. And lastly, is required the education and promotion program. The system is set up so that the EQC will designate waste sheds and the principal recyclable materials within each waste shed by January 1, 1985. They'll do that by rule. They will notify each city and county within the waste shed that they have been designated in that waste shed and that those certain recyclable materials are to be included within that waste shed. Any affected person, including collectors, recyclers, and local government, can appeal the designation of a waste shed or the materials to the EQC. All affected entities, including the collectors, the recyclers, and the local governments within the waste shed, must cooperate. This is a cooperative effort. There's no one only player. It's all of them together. Must cooperate to provide the opportunity to recycle by July 1, 1986. That's 18 months after the EQC has let them know they're in the waste shed and what materials are going to have to be in their programs. Then they must report to the DEQ on how they are providing the opportunity to recycle so that there is a checking mechanism with the DEQ to see that it is in fact happening out at the local level. DEQ will then review the report and see whether or not the opportunity is being provided at the level that it should be. And if not, it will go up to the EQC, and the EQC will then go out to that waste shed, will hold a hearing, and can then make an order which would require the opportunity to be provided. The
yes, sir, Dave?
Let's go in there. Mm-hmm. The opportunity to be provided. The opportunity to be provided for what? For a depot or recycling, a separation at the source level?
It will be all of those.
All of
the depot
those.
Will be being taken care of through the permit process. The other ones will be being taken care of through this process that we're discussing now.
In other words, you foresee with this that they can order source separation at the household level?
Yes, we do. In cities of more than 4,000.
Okay.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask
you? Yes, sir.
Is also your intention, it's hard to follow this up, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the outline, and I want to read the bill. And the bill is they're having trouble, our staff is getting out of things, but I want a chance to go through this in its entirety. But as I read this, you're still going to require as I read on four, depots to provide recycling. Is this still part of the bill that we had someone's objection to during the hearings? Are you still requiring that that happen?
Depots are required through the permittees, although there is a variance procedure in, for cases where the EQC would determine that there is no need for depots. And there is no longer any objection because we're looking at a very different bill and a very different process from what we...
Let me ask you just this question. If we, and I haven't seen the language, but if we gave the authority to the commission to order that to be,
that did not require it statutorily, how would you feel about it?
I think that we're comfortable with delineating what we think the program should be. We've now written a lot more flexibility in letting the EQC move from what we've delineated if they see that that is not the best way to go. There are several variance procedures, and so I think that's a good way. You set a target, but allow some flexibility from it.
All right, if I understand you, and I haven't seen the bill, so what you're saying is that you are comfortable with having the commission have authority without placing it in the statute and requiring it be in the permit? Is that what you're telling me, or are you telling me the reverse?
It's required under the permit, in the statute, under this bill, but there is a variance procedure where the EQC could determine that it didn't need to be required.
Do you have objections to reversing that process where we don't make it a requirement in the statute, but we give the EQC the authority to order such a...
Now, you're talking about the depot, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I think I'd rather have it be turned around, besides which there's really no objection at this point that we're hearing.
Okay.
From those people that they're willing to provide the depot. It was the rest of the program that they...
Okay, were. All right. You
there is two kind of variance procedures. One is a variance from the opportunity to recycle, as we've basically outlined, and then there is also a time extension procedure for people who, for some reason, can't get their program online by July 1, 86, and that will go through the commission.
Can I ask you one other thing?
There's no chairman here, but I don't think you might. I want to ask you a couple other questions on the bill that bothered me. The other question we had was in the bill.
Were you the chairman?
Yes.
Oh, well, who knows? We have a rotating chairman.
I have a rotating questionnaire, so.
Thank you.
You remember we had a provision in there that said, look, you can't charge more if you go into a recycling program. Is that still in there?
Yes, it is.
Why?
Because we think the incentive should always be there to recycle, and if you have, if you charge people who are participating, who are making the effort to sort of separate more, that's a disincentive.
Well, I guess what I'd have to put to you,
I have some real concern with that, because I'm not so certain that we can have a source separation at the household level and guarantee that it's going to initially be cheaper. In the long run, I think we can demonstrate under no circumstances, every circumstances, we will make it cheaper. But it may not be to start with. And I can tell you that I think that's something you better re-examine again. But to put in there that automatically you're statutorily prohibiting local government who may choose to have a recycling system and separation at the household level, even if it does cost more money. Because in the long run, it cuts down on further landfills and costs to the taxpayers. And I think that may be somewhat short-sighted, but that's still in here.
We think we've taken care of that because we have allowed the cost of the total program to be carried through to all people who are getting garbage collection. But you can't charge the people who are participating, who are making the effort to sort of separate, more than the people who are not.
Let me give you an example,
okay? Maybe that'll help you.
Let's take the city of Seven. We were looking at a source separation program in Salem and wanted, a number of us wanted to see it. The biggest problem is that we had some council members who decided, well, they didn't want any chance to cover. They wanted to put it all on the collector or somebody else, but they were going to make it cheaper and legislate it cheaper when indeed it was going to be more expensive initially. A citizens group were perfectly prepared to pay more money in order to get this going. I think what you're doing, in my example, is requiring or prohibiting from actually charging more for that type of service.
Yeah.
Okay.
They can charge more for everybody. In fact, the cost of the program shall be passed through under this bill so that that wouldn't happen. We had it very much in mind. But they can't have a two-tier system where in the city of Salem, the people who are participating would have to pay.
Okay. You're saying they can't charge one more for that service if the other doesn't.
Right.
Okay.
Well, they can't charge the person who's participating more.
I got you.
Okay.
But if we do it on a uniform basis, because we determine that's in our best interest.
Yes, you can charge over the whole system more than you're now charging.
Gotcha. Okay, let's move on.
Section 8 allows the EQC, after hearing and certain findings, to require waste generators to participate in the existing recycling program. This is the mandatory provision. It stands separate and extant from the rest of the bill. But it does say that after the recycling program is going and it's not working because people aren't participating or the economics aren't there unless more people participate, for some reason the EQC finds that they need to require mandatory participation, they could do it under this provision.
That's the provision I've been looking for.
It's there.
Let me ask one other question. Yes,
sir, Mr.
Chairman. One other little thing came to mind, if I recall, this garbage thing. We have industrial recyclers. Let's say that the city determines, and the through their, in order to make this
sort of separation at the household level feasible,
that they combine their total collection system, and that indeed the industrial resources are necessary to make that economically feasible totally. Can they do that and award it on a franchise system, or are they prohibited from that? Follow what I'm trying to tell you. I have garbage in this city, so much garbage. If we exclude the industrial users, and you know, there are some industrial users want us just to wipe them out, we aren't looking at a public policy for industrial users versus the household. We're looking at a public policy that deals with recyclable waste. In order to make that economically feasible for our community, and I'll use Salem since it's convenient here, we determine that they should have the total use of that so that we can get our resource separation done. Can we do that, or are we prohibited from that under this bill?
There are two tiers under this bill. The first tier, which provides the opportunity to recycle, includes residential, commercial, and industrial. The second tier, which is the mandatory participation tier, which would only happen with the EQC's special findings, can require industrial users, generators, to participate, but there is language here that was proposed by Tom Donica that would allow them, in the balancing of the cost benefit, to consider their costs in the source separation. And we don't have that in the language anyplace else. So in other words, if an industry were to be required to participate, they could say, well, it's going to cost us so much to break down the boxes, it's going to cost us so much to store it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Also included are explicit collection franchise authority, which is intended to alleviate any antitrust problems with franchising. There is a requirement, as I've already said, for just and reasonable rates. Collectors can charge less but not more for persons who participate in recycling. There's an exemption for recyclers who purchase or exchange recyclable materials for fair market value. In other words, recyclers, those who are out buying products, which is something that we're really not talking about here, are exempt from the bill. There are anti-scavenging provisions, which can, scavenging is a problem when somebody comes down the street just before the recycler and takes all the materials, and there are provisions for that. The bill sets statewide policy for management of solid waste. And last, the bill gives EQC civil penalties to enforce its order, either for the mandatory provisions or its order requiring recycling where it hasn't gotten started voluntarily. And that, in a nutshell, is what we've come up with as a compromise. I'm sorry that the draft isn't here. We thought you'd be later, and we would. But at any rate, I think we all agree that this is an adequate compromise. We would ask that you send the bill to Legislative Council to be drafted, because there are pieces of it which have never seen the light of council. And we hope you pass it out.
Mr. Chairman, let me ask a question about that. Have you been having trouble with the Legislative Council getting
No.
I just concern myself. I think they've done a lot of hard work there, and I really I want to read the thing, but my concern is, now you scheduled this for a work session on Friday?
Yeah, what I wanted to, I was hoping
to I read it all by Friday, but I'm willing to try.
I was hoping we would have the draft here today, which we don't, but we should have that sometime today before the sun sets.
Okay.
And,
I would think that from the draft you would be okay, though the council will probably do some grammatical changes.
Oh, the draft is all right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not worried about
okay. Just having a draft would be helpful, and some of us have other, this isn't the only bill in creation, but
I think it's an important one, and I think you have done a lot of hard work on it, and I appreciate it. I just like a chance to read the darn thing a little bit, but I think you've answered some of the questions I have concern with. The industrial question, I think, is one thing that this committee ought to remember is that a city may indeed want to order a franchise for all solid waste to make it economically feasible. I just don't want to preclude them from doing that. I'm not going to order them to do it, but they should have the right to do it if they determine that's what makes
There's
it
There's definitely
work.
An requirement that if the program is not going online, that the EQC, as part of its order, could require a franchise.
Let me ask you one other question. Did we handle the antitrust provision in here?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much. I think you did a good job.
Ed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, we had the two drafts that were in council. Either was to get all the parties together, and they came up with the final draft on their own, and then we were preparing to send that to council once they get it typed out.
Well, I just, as soon as you get a copy, I at least
we
like
should have
24 hours to read the
thing,
but I think they've pretty well
thought
it out. Okay. You were right.
Okay. Any questions?
That's good.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we'll get back to you hopefully before the meeting.
I'm going
to
check.
Next, we'll have a work session on two water bills that we discussed Friday, 223 and 226. And we'll let Mr.
That's a hell of a bill.
Mike, Dill, are you still around somewhere? Not sure. Mike Dill here? Okay, well, I told him I would give an opportunity to speak, so I'll let the record show that
Mr. Chairman,
gave him an opportunity to speak. Yes, sir, Dave.
I would like to move the amendments to Senate Bill 223-3, dated 6183.
Okay.
We've had momentous times, but I believe they've been worked over so many times that they're almost worn out.
So Daniel's amendments to the date 6183 SB 223-3 is for discussion. Objection?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 223 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Carry it?
Oh, yes, I'll carry it. I have no problem with it.
Daniel's Senate Bill 223 as amended to
shrink
the due pass recommendation. For discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Clark.
Aye.
Senator Day.
Aye.
Senator Handy.
Aye. Aye, sir. So don't play the roll.
Gladly.
We'll have
that's a good one.
Senate Bill 226. Mr. Shadow, do you want
I can see your bill book, but I also have two minutes.
I'll just pass this out for you here.
Attached to a copy of it in case you can't find it.
Yes.
Now, we have this in our subcommittee, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Where did the amendments come from?
Which one?
Sal Sawyer here from DEQ.
You would like me to explain the amendments we have here?
No, okay. I'd like to give you the amendments.
We have two amendments here. The first, that they are marked Senate Bill 226-1. This is really Senate Bill 225, which we held hearings on earlier in the session. And we used 225 for another purpose, and these are the leftovers. And this basically says that they must adopt by rule any hydrologic method that they use in determining stream mineral stream flows. And we also have an amendment that was proposed by the Water Resources Caucus that would add language referring to the Water Pollution Control Act. Basically, it's an attempt to deal with the pollution, the mineral flows to abate pollution, and to give some guidance on that.
That's 226.1?
226.1 is the hydrologic method language.
Okay.
The Water Caucus amendment is labeled that May 25th, 1983.
Oh, okay. Do we deal with that? I thought we made some amendment that said, maybe that was in the subcommittee that said minimize pollution.
And I think we linked it to the Federal Water Pollution Control Act.
I think we mentioned it that way.
Not that way. I guess I wonder whether...
This would, where we find this pertinent, would be very much on the Willamette River as well.
Yeah, if you have any more questions on the amendment, I can really... Is Jack Smith here? Mr. Smith, you want to just speak to this man briefly for the benefit of you?
Yeah, for the record, you still have to carry... I'm interested in an explanation of it so we have enough information to carry it adequately on the floor. So
you're going to carry it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Douglas Smith. I'm representing the Water Resources Caucus. The intent of this proposed revision is to try to connect stream flows to the ultimate discharge permits. They're currently in 226.
Sure, it's very difficult to many people in the...
Try to keep the conversations in the room to a minimum, or else go out into the hall, please. Thank you. Mr. Smith?
Well, in 226, there is some criteria for fish and wildlife to use to protect fish life, establish mineral stream flows to protect fish life. There presently is no criteria or basis for DEQ to use to establish or recommend stream flows to minimize pollution. And the intent of our proposal is to use an allowable pollutant loading as the connection between the stream flow and implementation or maintenance of the water quality standards in the state. And if you look at a sort of simple-minded equation, says water quality standards times stream flow is going to turn out to be an allowable loading beyond which you shall not go if you want to maintain existing water quality standards. The sections of the federal law that are referred to in the amendment are those sections which specify the procedure for doing this. It seemed kind of simple to just use that reference, but we're not related to that, you know, to that particular language. The intent is that there shall be, in order to arrive at a minimum stream flow for minimizing pollution, there shall be an allowable loading step. DEQ currently does this. Excuse me. Sorry, Carl.
Well, I guess I just have a concern. We have one little kind of semi-rule here, which is we try not to refer specifically in our statutes to any federal statutes in a way that's not so explicit, because they keep changing our statutes and then we don't know what we're talking about. So I guess that's the only concern I have about how you have it expressed here. That's my reluctance to adopt it. If there's another way, do we have DEQ people here? And either cross out the specific reference to the federal statutes or...
I don't believe he is. He's the way we're talking.
I don't want to reveal, but I do have some minor concern about specifically quoting federal law sections. I don't know. Dave knows more than I do about that.
We could, within provide you with some alternative language that would not mention the federal law.
That would be more, that would be helpful for my concern.
Why don't we do that? And I think we'll take the federal act service on Friday because I'd like Al Sawyer to be able to come in and comment on this. We'd be very some concerns. But I'll give you a little bit of time to draw up some alternative language.
I'm supportive of the concept I just got.
Yeah, no problem. I think the chairman and Senator Cohen are right. If we get Hal Sawyer down here and the two of you get your noodle together, if we lock it into a federal session, they change it. It may not be to our liking. Right now, it's to our liking. Sometimes they don't go to our liking. Okay?
That particular language was simply borrowed for your information from Chapter 468. Actually, it already exists, and it is convenient to do that. But as I said, we're in no way wedded to that
language.
Thank you. I will. There's a work session on the 226. Mike, yeah, come on up. You and I have a room with you on 223, and I'd like you to. You did have an opportunity to speak on that at our hearing some months ago, and shows essentially has the same intent as it did then, so why don't you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I apologize. I was on the phone. My name is Mike.
On 223.
Yes.
Okay.
My name is Mike Green, representing the Retailers Labor and Cattlemen Association. It's my understanding that the bill has now been passed out of committee. Well, we'll take just a brief moment.
You might get a second chance.
Well, that may be.
You can always go to that.
Yeah, you can come back real fast.
The other Retailers Labor and Cattlemen Association opposed 223. We have worked on Senate Bill 225. We were under the impression that that was the measure that was going to be dealing with minimum stream flows. There appeared to be some 73 or so streams that were of critical importance. And as you may recall, the agricultural community brought to you the idea of a moratorium. And the bill that you passed out is, in our opinion, a quasi-moratorium. We've talked to the Speaker, and basically we support the concept in 225. There are some amendments we would like to see accomplished on the House side that do not bring violence to the meaning or the intent of that bill. The problem we have with 223 is basically this. This will cloud those that want to utilize the water permit process for irrigation. And there are some good projects that are capable of being very efficient that may not take place because of the process of allowing the effective date to occur upon the proposal being submitted to the director or the board. We think that will cloud the process. We told you that about 3 or 4 months ago. We're sure it will. And from that situation, we do not think it's good public policy.
Chairman.
Sir, Dave.
Yes, Mr. One of the reasons that I find 225 a little bit of a problem, personally, is the fact that I really don't think it gets at the heart of what we're trying to do. Okay? And I don't see where this is going to do such great violence when you're really talking about they're still going to be able to irrigate. They're still going to be able to irrigate. What it says is they aren't necessarily going to have a right in perpetuity until we determine what the minimum stream flow is. That's what it's, the way I read this. Is that what you read?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, depending on where the minimum stream flow is placed, is whether or not you irrigate and how much water you could take out.
Well, I appreciate that, but here we've got a situation where, admittedly, we've over-appropriated. We've over-appropriated.
Well,
have we not?
I think we have to make a statement stream by stream. I don't know.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, in many of the streams, we've had testimony. We've sat in on most of these hearings, Mike. We've had pretty strong testimony that in many, many cases, I won't say each stream, but in many, many cases, we've over-appropriated water rates. That's been the overwhelming testimony. Doing that, we have continued on a policy, the legislature's acquiescence of issuing continually more permits. So then we've got to find some way that if we feel that we're going to establish these minimum stream flows, some way you say, okay, while we're doing this, you may issue permits, but they aren't going to necessarily have perpetuity to them until we've determined what that minimum strength was from this point forward. And I guess what I get from you is, and it bothers me just a little bit, because what it's saying is that we can't do that. That it just simply, this will jeopardize a number of irrigation projects, but if those irrigation projects indeed could affect the minimum stream flow and affects others' rights in the long run, it doesn't make much sense to continue on the same road of issuing those type of permits infinitum when we really don't know what the stream flow should be, do they? Should it?
Well, the way I would answer that is that let's assume for a moment that 225 passes. It's going to take, in my opinion, some time for the Water Policy Review Board to collect the data to establish a minimum stream flow that is adequate. It makes sense, not politically, but makes sense. So now we have a...
Well, I think it's going to have to make sense from a sense standpoint as well as political sense, because there's no question that this has been controlled politically.